From the beautiful campus of Texas A&M University, the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology brings you the Sports Medicine Podcast. Our mission is to make sense of and connect the science, practice, and application of the latest findings in sports medicine and human performance to the real world. Here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Hello, and welcome to the Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance weekly audio podcast. We're so glad that you took the time to download us and are joining us today. We've tried to bring you every week leaders in the field of sports medicine, the new stuff that's coming out, and an interpretation on the old stuff sometimes. And today is no exception. We're really pleased to have Dr. Dan Lieberman with us. Dr. Lieberman is professor and chair of the Human Evolutionary Biology Department at Harvard University. He is quite a distinguished scholar in the area. He's got over 89 articles in the literature right now, including, as to my count, 11 in the journal Nature, which is a very high-impact journal. So we are so glad to have you today with us, Dr. Lieberman. Thank you for being with us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you.
And we've asked Dr. Lieberman on because he has recently been writing and thinking, actually I think he's been doing it for several years now, about barefoot running. So can you tell us, just get us started on barefoot running and why you're interested in barefoot running?
Well, I've been interested in the evolution of running and the biology of running for many, many years. In 2004, my colleague Dennis Bramble and I published a paper in the journal Nature, it was actually on the cover, entitled Born to Run, in which we made the argument that humans evolved to run long distances, and this is a very ancient ancient behavior in the human lineage. Mm-hmm. So I've been interested in how and why we started running and why that happened. And, of course, as soon as you start thinking about running, of course, barefoot running has to come to mind, because if we've been running for 2 million years and the modern running shoe was only invented in the 1970s, that meant that for most of our evolutionary history, we were probably running barefoot, and when we weren't barefoot, we were wearing very minimal shoes. So
right.
started thinking about what running was like before the modern shoe era and how it was possible, actually. You possibly run barefoot. But that was really what motivated my original interest.
Especially over sticks and stones, and
yeah,
they didn't have paved roads and sidewalks back then.
No, they didn't. Well, actually, any barefoot runner will tell you sidewalks are one of the nicest places to run, because one of the things about barefoot running is that what you love is smooth. It's rough that's unpleasant. Smooth is nice.
When I have talked to people about this, and the symposium you gave at ACSM this past May, for me, was just a great symposium. I'd known this discussion was out there, but until you put it in the format that you did in May, I really hadn't paid much attention. But, you know, when I've talked to people since then, the first thing they say is, well, I don't want to run barefoot because I might cut my feet.
Well, you know, it's funny how people react to the idea of barefoot running. And I find it kind of funny because, you know, for millions of years, that's all anybody ever did all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So why of a sudden have we all of a sudden gotten so worried about getting cut? You know, I speak to a lot of older folks, and they said, oh, yeah, every summer we took off our shoes, spent the entire summer without our shoes. So one of the things I find funny about this is how out of touch people are with their bodies. And just the fact that people are so worried about getting cut tells me that, you know, we're really out of touch with how our feet work. You know, keratin, what makes a callus is made out of keratin.
Mm-hmm.
And keratin is what makes up your fingernails, for example. It's also what makes up rhino horn. And keratin is really strong. And when you build up a normal callus, you're fine. You can run on glass and you'll be fine. It's just, and the fact of the matter is that today people have no calluses on their feet. Frankly, that's an abnormal state from an evolutionary perspective. Because for most of our existence as a species, people had very calloused feet.
To some extent, you're really talking about changing the style of running more than just taking off your shoes.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that's really disappointed me about the whole so-called debate about barefoot running is that the question most people are asking is, well, should I do it, or is it better for you? And I think those are the wrong questions. I mean, if you should do it if you want to. Nobody should be afraid of it. It's no more abnormal than, you know, taking off your gloves. You know,
right.
I mean, it's not a big deal, right?
Right.
I mean, if it were a big deal, we would have gone extinct long ago, right?
Right.
So people should do it if they want to, and if they don't want to do it, that's fine too. I don't think anybody should tell anybody what to do. And, you know, there's a reason we invented shoes. Shoes are very useful for protecting the sole of your foot.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that there are people who are constantly looking for magic bullets, you know, to prevent injury.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow the idea that if you suddenly run barefoot and you're not going to get injured is preposterous. So I'm kind of depressed by, you know, all the articles about, you know, is barefoot better, or the way in which people frame the debate is, you know, whether you should go barefoot or not go barefoot or et cetera. I don't think that's really the question. I think, you know, A, the question is, you know, how did we run barefoot before shoes were invented? And B, what does that help us learn about how we run and how we can avoid injury? It's not going to be as simple as just go barefoot and you'll stop getting hurt.
Right.
I think it's a little bit more complicated than that. And to summarize the argument, when you no longer have a fancy shoe underneath you, you can no longer rely on all that cushioning and technology to run. And so it forces runners to run in a particular style, or encourages them to run in a particular style, which is much less impactful.
Mm.
You have to run much more lightly and much more gently. You have to increase your stride rate in general. You change a number of things about your gait, and what we need to learn, we need to study, is whether or not that gait, which is obviously more natural, because obviously we did not learn to run with shoes, or evolve to run with shoes, whether that more natural form of gait can help people avoid injury.
Mm.
So it's not whether you have shoes on your feet or not, it's how you run.
Right.
That's, I think, what really matters.
And as you talk about this, you're really talking about where people land on their feet.
That's part of it. It's not all of it. So I think there's enough. I mean, I think it's the, you know, the one thing where the rubber hits the road, right, is where you land, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the one thing that people, that their initial, you know, assumption when you think about barefoot running is you hit the ground and ouch, right?
Right.
Like, gosh, you know, imagine slamming into the ground without a shoe to cushion you. Right, that's the people's first reaction. But you know, if you take off anybody's shoes and you make them run, you know, down a paved street for a few hundred yards or so, they'll quickly figure out that landing on their heel hurts.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, I don't think anybody could run a long distance at a reasonable speed landing on their heel,
right,
just sort of shuffling. And so people quickly start moving towards the front of their foot.
Mm.
And when you do that, you land with much less exchange of momentum between the foot and the ground, and you have much less of an impact.
Mm-hmm.
You still have an impact, of course, but you have much less of what we call an impact peak.
Right.
And so that's much more comfortable.
Right. And you had said something in May at the symposium, and I want to compliment you again. You had given an example, and you said something very similar to that. You said, imagine taking off your shoes and just running down the hall. How long would it take before you stopped landing on your heels? And I have use that with people, and it's amazing how quickly people immediately get it. They go, well, I wouldn't run on my heels if I didn't have shoes on.
No, in fact, if anybody were to get up right now and just jump, right,
mm-hmm,
would any of them land on their heel?
No.
Of course not.
Yeah.
Running is jumping, right? You're just jumping from one foot to the other.
Right.
And when the biomechanics is kind of fun. It's interesting that nobody ever really bothered to figure this out before. I mean, people knew that people who land on the ball of the foot, what we call forefoot strikers, tend to have a what's called no impact peak. So if you measure the force on the ground when you hit the ground, so imagine the ground as a scale, right,
mm-hmm,
force plate, right? That initial, when you're a heel striker, right, you initially hit the ground, there's an initial kind of rapid rise in force as the body comes to a dead stop with the ground. Then that kind of falls off again, and then that force then rises again towards midstand. So the peak has kind of two humps, right?
Mm-hmm.
The first hump is a very rapid spike. That's called the impact peak. And then there's a second propulsive peak that occurs pretty much at midstand, when the body's center of mass is at its lowest point. That's when the body's pushing off hardest against the ground, and then because of Newton's law, ground is pushing its hardest against the body.
Mm-hmm.
When you forefoot strike, we've long known this. Peter Cavanaugh pointed this out, I think, in 1980, or maybe it had been known before that, that there's no impact peak.
Mm.
That initial first sharp, sudden shock, we can't measure that on the ground. Or if we measure it, it's really, really imperceptible. It's very tiny.
Right.
And what that's telling us is that when you land this way, you're basically landing with that shockwave occurring.
Mm.
And, of course, that's what hurts.
Right.
So that's why when you're barefoot, you don't do it.
Right.
And it turns out, you know, it's just, you know, people are pretty smart, right? They
right.
generally avoid things that hurt them, right? And I think that natural selection is actually, pain is an adaptation. Pain actually is a signal to tell our bodies not to do things. Usually if something hurts, you shouldn't be doing it, right?
Right.
Nobody, I think, ever got tibial stress fracture without basically ignoring shin splints. Shin splints are an adaptation to tell you something's wrong. You better change what you're doing or stop, right?
Hmm.
So I think pain, that pain of slamming into the ground on your heel is also an adaptation to tell you something's wrong.
Right, right.
So what happens when you forefoot strike is two things change. The first is that when you forefoot strike and you land on the ball of the foot and then let the heel down, we call this toe-heel-toe running, right?
Mm-hmm.
It means that the foot becomes, the ankle becomes a spring.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you become much more compliant. Your leg is much less stiff when you hit the ground in a forefoot strike than a heel strike. In a heel strike, basically, your ankle's stiff and your knee is stiff, too. And so basically, your mass of your leg comes to a dead stop, and that mass times that velocity is momentum. That momentum has to be exchanged over a certain period of time. That's that shockwave. But when you land the ground with just your forefoot, the only thing that's coming to a stop is part of your foot. So much less mass comes to a dead stop. And then the other thing is, as I said, is that you're much less stiff. You're much more compliant. Just as when you get up and you jump and land on the ball of your foot, your leg is much less stiff, so you slow that rate of loading much more, so you have a nice, gradual, gentle landing, and it doesn't hurt.
So that all your lower leg is acting as a shock absorber.
It's not even a shock absorber. Oh. It's just there's no shock.
No shock there.
People say that all the time, but it's actually not true. There's no shock is being generated in the first place.
Mm. And I would say for our listeners out there, we're going to put some links in the notes on the website to Dr. Lieberman's websites there's a couple videos out there that we'll put links to as well that you can see these force curves, or these impact curves, and exactly what he's talking about. And the difference truly is remarkable.
Yeah. So the thing is that when people heel strike in a running shoe, it sort of depends on how they're running, right?
Right.
Because, not all heel strikes are the same, and we have to be really careful about not overgeneralizing. But, we all know thumpers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those folks, you hear them coming from a mile off,
right?
And, most people who are experts on running know that, thumpers are just basically thumping their way right to the doctor's office.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a good idea. Good runners are quiet. And those thumpers are basically, that thump, that noise is a proxy for that collision, right, that impact. And, those impacts, there's a bit of a debate going on now. Not everybody agrees with this, but a number of folks, including Irene Davis, have published quite a few papers showing that those rapid, high-rate, high-magnitude shocks that occur at the initial landing of the foot with the ground are very injurious, because it's no different in the amount of force than if I were to take a sledgehammer and hit you on the heel, right?
Right.
If I do that millions of times, that's not good.
No, and no one would want to do that.
The other thing is that the shoe doesn't get rid of that shock. It just slows it down a little bit.
Mm.
And it makes it comfortable, and you can't feel it. So you're still landing that way. Those thumpers that we hear coming down the road, they're crashing into the ground. The shoe gives them enough cushioning so that they're not in pain, right?
Right, right.
But one of the hypotheses out there that has yet to be fully tested, but there's pretty good data out there, and there's growing evidence, and there are more studies that have been published recently by Irene Davis and some others, showing that those are the rate and magnitude of those impact peaks are strongly related to people's injury rate. And that makes sense, right? If I just keep bashing you any part of your body over and over again, we actually know the biomechanics behind why that might cause injury. So if you're a barefoot runner, you can't afford to do that. I mean, that's the whole point, right?
Or
if you were a runner back in the old days before modern running shoes, wearing just what are now basically racing flats, right?
Mm-hmm.
And think of what Bill Rogers and Frank Shorter and all those guys wore, right? They didn't wear fancy shoes with any of this stuff in them. They basically had, slippers on.
Yeah, I remember running in Converse Chuck Taylor.
Sure, exactly. Yeah. Well, that's what I grew up running in.
Yeah.
And, most of those folks, we think, were much more often landing on the front of their foot. Bill Rogers, for example, Frank Shorter, they were both forefoot strikers, right? And that's because they didn't have all that cushioning under their heel, and that was the comfortable way of running.
And you've published some work recently with some of the elite Kenyan and Ethiopian runners, and that's basically what you've shown in some of these folks is the majority of them actually forefoot strike.
Oh, almost all of them are forefoot strikers. And in fact, I think, now I'm sure your readers your listeners know more than I do about this, because but I'm trying to think of any world record that's actually held by a heel striker.
Hmm. In any running event.
I'm not sure if I know of any.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Certainly
either.
The you know, for the marathon, for example, Gebre Selassie, who still technically holds the world record, even though Mutai should have won it at Boston this year. But both of those guys are forfeit strikers. Paula Radcliffe is a forfeit striker. I mean, the list goes on, right?
So nobody's
out there saying, oh, forfeit striking is bad, you shouldn't forfeit strike, right? I mean, obviously, many, if not most, of the world's very best runners are forfeit strikers. And we've always known, as people speed up, they tend to be more likely to forfeit strike.
Mm-hmm.
But there are also slow runners out there who are also forfeit strikers. So I think forfeit striking is a very natural, normal way to run. It's the way most barefoot runners run. And I think we can learn a lot about running from looking at the biomechanics of forfeit striking. But it's not just forfeit striking. It's also stride length. It's also lean. There's other aspects to that kind of running, which I think are also important.
Yeah, I find that when I have, as I have switched to barefoot running, I found that it changes the lean.
Absolutely.
I have to lean forward more than I normally do when I run.
Oh, really? See, I think that what most people do is they end up actually maybe leaning more forward more maybe at the ankles, but less at the hips.
Mm.
That's been my experience.
Mm. Interesting. So do you think that our shoes, our running shoes, have led us down an injury path over the last 30 years?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, we don't have enough data to say yes or no to that. All I can say is this. There's no good injury data that I've ever found from before the running shoe was invented. So really, people didn't start collecting serious data on injury until the 1980s.
Right.
And by then, people were already wearing shoes that had pretty substantial heel.
All right.
In that time, so in the 30-plus years since then, there's been no decrease whatsoever in injury rates.
Mm.
That's for sure. So if you look at the early studies from the 80s and studies now, rates fluctuate enormously depending upon the study and the population, et cetera. But there's no trend that I can see towards injury rates going down.
So supposedly the shoes have gotten better, but the injury rates haven't.
Right, which tells us that that approach isn't really working.
Mm.
And so my feeling is still that, shoes may help some people for sure. Orthotics may help some people for sure. But we tend to be a culture, a society where people are always looking for quick fixes that you can just buy.
Mm-hmm.
And, we teach swimmers how to swim. We teach golfers how to golf. We teach tennis players how to play tennis. How come we're not teaching runners how to run properly?
Mm.
I go out there in the Charles River here in Boston, and I see a few good runners out there who look like they've got good form, but I see a lot of people out there who are just—it's kind of painful to watch them run.
Yeah, slogging along. Yeah,
slogging along, and a lot of track teams, and a lot of coaches don't teach running form anymore because they're afraid to tamper with their runners and form, and we've stopped teaching running. But if you go back in the old days and look at old running manuals, old coaching manuals from the 30s and the 40s and the 50s, and you look at Lydiard and Fred Wilt and a lot of the great old folks from the old days, that was standard to teach people good form.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most of those folks taught what I would call a barefoot style. They weren't necessarily teaching barefoot running, although a lot of them did run barefoot. Think of Herb Elliott, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Percy Cerruti, had all his runners run barefoot a lot. He thought it really strengthened the foot.
We talk a lot on this podcast about encouraging people to be active, but it sounds like you're the same as I am. You see people out there running, and some people just look like they're in pain from their. It's painful to watch them run, and you have to say, well, no wonder they don't want to run because it looks like they hurt when they run.
Exactly, it takes all the fun and the joy out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think one of the great things about running is that. We were built for it. Our bodies have been molded by millions of years of evolution to be good at it. We have the Achilles tendon, right?
Mm.
The Achilles tendon is a spring for running. It's not important for walking at all. Chimpanzees don't have them. Other apes don't have Achilles tendons, or they're maybe about a centimeter long. We've got all these features which we evolved that make us really good at running. And so, people who enjoy running know just how wonderful that feeling is to just be kind of bouncing along effortlessly and just feeling great about it. And then it's so sad to see people, it's like cod liver oil. It's like some medicine that they're being forced to take in the morning because they know it's going to make them healthy.
Right.
And they're just chugging away.
Yeah.
And they're deriving no joy or no pleasure out of it. And I think part of that is because they're not running well.
Yeah. That's when you want to stop them and go, let me help.
Exactly.
Let me help, you know, make your life better. Now, we kind of touched on this earlier, but if someone wants to try this barefoot running style, they don't have to take off their shoes. There are some shoes that they can buy that will help them make this transition.
That's a really interesting point. So I would say that there is no such thing as barefoot running when you're wearing a shoe.
Okay.
I find it funny that a lot of shoe companies talk about being barefoot shoes. I think that's an oxymoron. How can you be a barefoot shoe? As soon as you have something between you and the ground, it's a shoe. And as soon as you have a shoe on, that means that you're getting less sensory feedback from all those nerves in your feet. And that's okay. Shoes have a role out there. You know, the Tarahumara, the famous Tarahumara, you know, who run those Delta Marathon runners.
Yeah.
Chris McDougall wrote about that book. And when the Tarahumara, you know, beat everybody else's pants off in Leadville, right, they're not going barefoot. They're wearing shoes. They're wearing minimal shoes. They're wearing sandals.
Right?
So I think that, yes, you can run, I think, just fine in any kind of shoe you want. You can wear high-heeled running shoes with arch supports and pronation control. You can wear Tarahumara-like sandals. You can go completely barefoot. You can wear Five Fingers. You can wear Vivo barefoot. You can wear Merrell, Nike Freeze. There are a lot of great shoes out there, and there's a shoe out there for everybody, and I think it's nice that there's a lot of choice out there. So I do think that there's a few important things that people need to consider.
Yeah.
One is there's a reason people like to heel strike, and that is because it's easier.
Mm-hmm.
Forefoot striking requires a lot more calf muscle strength. So the first thing people notice when they take off their shoes and go running or try minimal running is that their calves scream like a banshee. You know,
right.
It's one of the most painful things you can imagine, right? In particular, I have college students here, right, who think they're made out of you know,
they're invincible.
Krypton,
yeah.
Right? And they think that they can just take off their shoes, go run 5 miles barefoot, and that they'll be fine. And, of course, they're hobbling around campus the next day, and their calves are screaming, right? Because, you know, it takes a lot of calf muscle strength to forefoot strike, and I think it's one of the reasons people like the heel strike. It's actually easier in a way to run. It's easier to overstride than not.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to build up muscle strength in your calves. The other thing is that you also have to build up foot muscle strength, because when you land on the ball of the foot and on the heel down, you're not only using your calf muscles more, but you're also putting more force on the foot, and you're using all those muscles in the arch of the foot more. And most people have really tragically weak feet because arch supports and other distal shoes basically subsume the job of those foot muscles and allow you to have a weak foot.
Right.
So you have to build up foot strength. You have to build up calf muscle strength. And you can't do it overnight. It takes months of hard work and gradual transitioning to be able to do it so that you can run a long distance.
It's like any other strength and conditioning program, isn't it?
Right. And the problem is that people get so excited and they just leave their sense behind when they go for a run and they get hurt and they get injured. So I really sort of worry about folks who do that. And so, you know, you just have to really exercise serious, profound control. The way I did it, it worked well for me, and I know it's worked for some other folks I know. There's been no scientific studies yet to test this. But if I wanted to go for a 5-mile run at first, what I did was I would go running initially in my standard shoes, and I would just take them off after, say, 4 miles,
mm-hmm.
and then either put on a minimal pair of shoes or even go barefoot.
Mm-hmm.
And then after about a month of doing that, then I switched to maybe 2 miles, to three in my shoes, and then 2 barefoot, and then kind of 2.5, 2.5. And I slowly, over the course of many months, it was a pain because I would have to go running with 2 pairs of shoes. But that worked for me, and I didn't have to cut down my mileage, and I liked that. But I know other people who've just kind of slowly, incrementally just built up. But whatever you do, if you don't do it slowly, you'll get injured.
Right. And so you do want to transition to it. And again, for our listeners who want to try this, we have some links actually already on our website about some transition programs. But that really seems to be the big deal, is to make sure you transition appropriately.
I guarantee if you don't transition properly, I guarantee you'll get hurt.
Right.
And you know, the other thing is that just simply taking off your shoes or wearing a minimal shoe doesn't mean that you're going to run properly.
Mm-hmm.
And I really worry about people who don't learn to run properly. I mean, and again, a shoe is a shoe. No matter what it's on your foot, it's still a shoe. And so just as there's bad shod running, there's also bad, you know, minimal running or even bad barefoot running. So one of the things that I think happens is that people, I think, they think, okay, all I have to do is not heel strike. They start forefoot striking, but they're still doing other bad things.
Right.
And now they have like the worst of both worlds. They know they're still running badly,
mm-hmm.
but they no longer have a shoe to help them control pronation and various other sorts of things. They're even more likely to get hurt. The thing I see sometimes is people who switch to barefoot running but they're still leaning too much, and they still have a really slow cadence. Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing that really helps people, there's probably one little magic trick that helps you improve your form really rapidly. It's to increase your stride rate. Buy one of those little metronomes.
Mm-hmm.
They cost $20.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of running shoe stores sell them, and you can buy them on the web. And just set the little beeper to 180 or something close to that you feel comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
I think anything above 170 is good.
Yeah.
And what that does is just forces you to shorten your stride. And when you shorten your stride, it means that you put less torquing forces around your joint, less stressful for them. It means you're much less likely to heel strike. It means that your whole leg is less stiff. I mean, when we put people on the treadmill, we can see that when they overstride and forefoot strike, they still have a much steeper rate and rise of loading than people who have a higher stride frequency.
Hmm.
So I think shortening your stride, increasing your stride frequency is fantastic. And furthermore, you should know that when you do it, you're actually running in a more optimal cadence. All the world's best runners run at around 180 steps per minute, and there's a number of studies which show that that's actually energetically less costly. So there's no cost whatsoever to doing that.
It's interesting that you bring that up because so much, in cycling, there's so much emphasis placed on the RPM, the cadence, and there's very little of that done in the running world.
Yes, but there should be.
There should be, yeah.
There should be, and the cyclists have it right, and runners, you know, good runners know that. If you watch good runners, right, all good runners have a high turnover.
Right.
You can see them. You see all good runners, they have this quick pickup of their legs. They're running at close to 180 steps per minute. They're not overstriding. And by overstriding, I mean they're not landing with their foot like way out in front of their knee and, you know, way out in front of the hip.
Mm.
You know, good runners land with their foot reasonably close underneath the hip, and in fact, the foot is underneath the knee. And if you're doing that, whether you're wearing a shoe or not wearing a shoe, you're gonna run with a more compliant leg. You're gonna actually waste less energy, slowing your body down. You'll put less stress on your leg. It's just good running form. It's easier to get away with it in a shoe than when you're not in a shoe. But you can still do that when you're not in a shoe. When you're not in a shoe, you also not have any of the protection that the shoe provides. So,
mm-hmm.
So you know. People who want to try barefoot or minimal running, it behooves them to really learn good form. And then the final thing I want to say is that, you know, we have this natural free coach that costs absolutely nothing that people don't often try, and that's actually going barefoot. People are just so scared of it. Get over your fear. Just try it. And a lot of people's initial thought is, well, if I'm going to do it, I should go to a beach or a lawn. And actually, that's the worst place to learn proper form because it's like running with a shoe underneath your foot, right?
Right.
Doesn't force you. I mean, there's nothing wrong with running barefoot on a beach or lawn. It's actually a wonderful thing to do, and it's all great. But if you really want to force yourself into good form, go somewhere hard but smooth, like an old, well-worn road,
mm-hmm.
or a tennis court, or you know, something like that. That's a great place to learn to run barefoot. Try it out. Don't do it at dark, so you can see all the glass and the needles and all the other things you're worried about, and just try it. I guarantee that after a few hundred meters or so, you'll be smiling and thinking, it feels great.
Preparing for this, Justin and I were chatting about some of the questions, and one of the things that he mentioned was that he has seen in some gyms where people were asked not to run barefoot on the treadmills.
Yeah, I've been told to do that too.
Oh, really?
I'm paddling sometimes. Now, I get on a treadmill, and you know, sometimes I just take the shoes off. I just, you know, treadmills are great places to run barefoot.
Hmm.
And I guess we have a squeamishness in our culture about barefoot, which is kind of funny because when I go for a barefoot run, first thing I do when I get in the house is I go wash my feet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, how many people, when they come back from a run,
go
on the same stuff, go wash their shoes?
Right.
The feet aren't any less dirty than shoes, but we have a kind of squeamishness in our culture about bare feet.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that you mentioned treadmills because that's actually another great place to learn technique.
Hmm.
If I can mention that, because
mm-hmm.
a treadmill is like a sounding board, right? You
mm-hmm.
know, treadmills are much more noisy than running outside, right?
Right.
Because they amplify that sound of the foot hitting the ground, right? And so when you get on a treadmill and you switch from a heel strike to a forefoot strike, so amazing, the difference in sound, astonishing.
It should become a lot quieter.
It becomes incredibly quiet, and it's a fantastic way to assess your gait. So I think, actually, treadmills are another great place to really work on your running form, because you can just by listening to yourself hitting the ground, You can kind of, you know, it's not everything, right? It doesn't tell you about lean and overstriding and all that, but it does tell you a lot about just how much force you're colliding with against the ground. It's a really useful technique, and it's completely free. And I think, in fact, more people actually ran without iPods or, you know, whatever, and just listened to themselves hitting the ground. I think they might realize, you know, that sound of your body hitting is actually really useful information.
Yeah, and if you run barefoot on a treadmill, you don't have to worry about glass and needles and all that other
stuff. That's right. So I think, you know, if you're worried about where to start, that's a terrific place to start.
Excellent. We're running short of time here, and we didn't even get to talk about your thoughts about how we evolved to run long distance. Maybe we'll do that at a different time.
Sure, yeah, sir.
But we always give our guests an opportunity to give a take-home message for the audience. You have a take-home message?
I think the take-home message is have fun. You know, don't let anybody tell you what to do. Be a skeptic. None of us, nobody knows yet how to decrease injuries. There's not a single expert on the planet who actually knows the answer to that question. And my hypothesis is, my guess is that really the most important thing for all of us who want to run or try running is how we run, not what's on our feet. I think that's, you know, ultimately it's your body that's going to determine how well you run. And people talk about asymmetries and biomechanical abnormalities, et cetera. Well, you know, if that many of us have asymmetries and abnormalities, you know, we would have gone extinct a few million years ago. I mean, everybody's asymmetrical. That's not an excuse not to run, and it's not a reason that people shouldn't get injured. So I think we can all learn. I think the most important thing about barefoot running is that it teaches us something about natural running.
Excellent point. Great take-home message. We want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, my pleasure.
Great conversation. For those of you listening and you've been waiting for the free T-shirt question, here's Justin.
Which type of foot strike produces a lower impact peak?
So be the first one to email us with the correct answer to that question, and you'll win one of our nifty Huffines Institute podcast T-shirts. As I've said in the previous weeks, you better hurry up because we're running out of the first edition. And if you want a complete collection, you're going to need to get this one. Again, I want to thank you, Dr. Lieberman, for being with us today.
My pleasure.
And thank you all for taking the time to download and listen to us. Join us again next week for another leader in the field of sports medicine. You never know who's going to be here. It's always an entertaining conversation. And until then, we hope you stay active and stay healthy.
Thanks for listening to the Huffines Institute Weekly Sports Medicine Podcast. This podcast was produced by Justin Dobson and made possible by generous support from the Omar Smith family and the Sidney and J.L. Huffines family. This podcast is published under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. That means you can't sell it or change it, but feel free to give it to everyone you know and to talk and blog about us. And in case you were wondering, our openings and closing are provided by johnmilesproductions.com, providing voiceovers internationally. Music was provided by Dave Zeltner. Find him on the web at davidzeltner.com. And just so you know, we love hearing from you. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffinespodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.